Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yo. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yo. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back. It's your boy C-Rock here in That One Studio on What Are You Made Of Show. So glad to have you here listening or watching or however you're consuming this content. Got another great guest for you today. Again, we're going to continue to bring you people that have been on a journey to success, have had success, but we're going to expose the ingredients that have gone into making them who they are. We obviously know that this journey to success is invisible, and we need to like open that up. So people that are going on, you're listening here, you go on a journey and realize that you're not alone when you have some setbacks or learning lessons that happen. And let's bring Craig Dowden in. Craig Dowden is the Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author of A Time to Lead, which he wrote with Alan Mulally. Is that how you pronounce his name?
That's Mulally. It.
Legendary former CEO of Ford Motor Company. I've heard of him before. Yeah, I just and then he's a member. Craig's a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and is an award-winning keynote speaker who talks about the science and practice of leadership, team, and organizational excellence. He's got an awesome podcast as well called Do Good to Lead Well. It's ranked in the top 0.5% of podcasts globally. And he routinely works and speaks with CEOs and other senior executives about the science and practice of positive leadership. Craig, welcome to the show. So I always start the show the same way, Craig, and that's with the question, what are you made of?
Yeah, I love the question. So what am I made of? I would say I have a love for learning and development. I love, and it's one of the reasons I was so excited to join you, Mike, because I think it's so great to think about. So how can we plot our own road to success? I think that's awesome. I have a passion for positive leadership and the science of positive leadership. So love all of the evidence-based practice and just have this endless optimism, enthusiasm, and drive to ask why not or what's possible. So I think they're the things that really get me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah. Have you always been a lifetime learner, or did it happen like as you got to a certain age where you're like, man, I just got to learn more?
Yeah, I've always been, it's from the earliest ages, I was always interested in what makes people tick. That's why I pursued my PhD in psychology and business. I just find people fascinating and how different people can look at the same situation in vastly different ways and the things that they take out of each conversation. And so that's just something that followed me throughout. So I always loved asking questions, talking to different people, hearing different perspectives. And so I take assessments, and every time I'm learning and development, just constant. For me, having conversations like this, nothing more fun.
Yeah, man, I agree. And I, you know, there's always a more we can learn, and because it's different perceptions, right? And perspectives, yeah, that we can take in, both those P words. Because at the end of the day, like when I'm going through a situation in my 30s, and then by the time I get to my 40s, it's a totally different, I have totally different experiences that I've been through, totally all different data to analyze and assess, right? So it never stops learning about leadership. And, you know, so let me ask you this, take me back. What's your story? Where did it all start for you? Obviously you went to college because you got a PhD, but where did it all start for you?
Yeah, I grew up in Newfoundland. So the easternmost city in Canada, St. John's, Mount Pearl. And so that's where it all began. And just from my earliest age, you know, in high school, I was that relationship therapist, or, you know, for people either with their partners or their parents or whomever. And so right away, that was my life, just having conversations till late in the morning and waking up early and starting again. And when I got to university, studied psychology, was fascinated by the whole field of psychology. And then I was like, you know what? People have personalities, businesses have personalities, and if you fire them together, I'm just never going to be bored. So I set out to make a career on this path. And fortunately, I was right. Just kind of kept moving along. So that's really been that's been the start of my journey.
And then did you work in corporate America? Or Canada, I mean?
Yeah, that's right. Corporate Canada. Yeah, a little smaller than corporate America. Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, I started my own business when I was in grad school. So I was fascinated by consulting. And in fact, when I graduated, one of my first position was a managing director role. So I was kind of doing consulting gigs and doing contractual work. And then my first full-time job was being a managing director for a talent management firm, actually in Ottawa, where I was doing my PhD. So I kind of jumped right into that leadership chair, which I found was fascinating, and drinking out of a fire hose, but I loved it. And it was in the same space. It was all around bringing the best out of people, learning about what makes them tick, getting the best out of organizations.
Yeah. And then, so when you went on your own and had your own business, like, what was your go-to-market strategy? How did you start getting business? Because did you know marketing? Did you know how to market? Did you?
I wish the answer was yes. Yeah. I mean, I grew organically. So people just found out about me. They knew about me through the roles that I had previously. And when I let people know that I was looking for a new opportunity. And when I started on my own, I was contemplating going back into, because I was also in a managing director position. I thought, all right, am I really ready to take the plunge and be a solopreneur? And I was leaning heavily towards getting back into it. And then the longer it went and the more people connected with me and the more work that I was doing on my own, I was like, this is awesome. Like, why would I go back and why not keep going? So again, asking that question, why not? Why not? And so just really set out on that path and so built momentum. And here I am almost 10 years later doing my thing.
And do you have a company now where you have employees, or you mainly have the employees of the people, the teams and companies you're working for?
So I have people that support me. So I have a great team that supports the podcast that I do. I have contractors who will help me out on the, you know, building different pieces for my marketing or outreach or video snippets or all those other elements. But I'm essentially the power of one, if you will. So I do all the coaching and speaking myself and with the different clients.
And the reason I ask that is, how does leadership from your point of view, right? How does that differ from that versus the people that you're consulting with that have employees, right? W-2 employees and then different departments and all that. Like, how is that? Is there any difference between the two?
Yeah, the way I look at leadership, I kind of take a step even further back and say we're all the CEOs of our lives. So like, we make choices every single day in terms of how we're showing up. So we're chief financial officer, chief marketing officer, chief operating officer, chief executive officer. And so that's how I approach it. And I think in every single domain element of our lives that we are leading ourselves. And so that's fundamentally it. And then to me, great leadership starts with great self-leadership. And so how I show up in each situation is going to be hugely important in terms of the impact that I experience.
Yeah. You know, one of my core values is leadership starts with me.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized that, you know, after observing a lot of the people that I used to be in the mortgage industry, and we started a division, we had 7 branches and 50 some employees at any one time. And when we were doing that, I noticed some of my friends that were managers with me of the company, they were like, you know, working and managing some of the branches, that they wouldn't hold people accountable. And I started thinking about this and doing some research and paying attention. And I started realizing, wait a minute, they're not holding other people accountable because they're not holding themselves accountable. Yeah. So then I started preaching that. And one of our core values has got to be now leadership starts with me.
Yeah.
And I noticed that is that something that you picked up pretty quick too? Is like, you know, people they won't hold others accountable.
They don't Absolutely. Hold I couldn't agree more. And a lot of times we ask things of other people that we don't ask of ourselves. So it's like, yeah, one of my favorite expressions is, you know, take my advice because I won't use it anyways. and it's really on that accountability part. And I remember, you know, I've had the privilege to speak with Marshall Goldsmith, top rated executive coach in the world. And he was saying, Craig, what just amazes him is how many people look to others for accountability. And then it's like, how do you demonstrate accountability? When have you last taken responsibility for something you've said or done? When have you last apologized for people? When are you leading by example? And I think it's so important when we're in a leadership role to have our house in order and then to start to think about, okay, so then how do I get the best out of others around me? And I think that's the really critical part. And we jump right into, okay, well, how do I get the best out of Mike without even thinking about what makes me tick and how do I show up as my best self? And then once I figure that out, and it's a continual journey, now I got to get out and say, okay, so what makes Mike his best? Like, where's he going to flourish and what he's going to do? And, you know, and as you've talked about, you've just done an amazing job of connecting with people and learning and sharing ideas and principles and practices. That's you at your best. That's awesome. So how do we unleash that?
Yeah, and then another word that comes into this when people aren't holding themselves accountable and then try to lead other people is integrity, right? Yeah. And a lot of people think integrity means something different. Like, I'm talking about integrity like a building has integrity. You know, you got the foundation, and if that foundation's not there, there's the building lacks integrity, and it can fall, right? So I think it's integrity, like being integral, right?
I couldn't agree more. And another one of the things to build on what you're sharing, Mike, because I think it's such an important point. You mentioned my collaboration with Alan Mulally out of Ford. And during our conversations, he talks about the power of authentic leadership. And I love his definition of authentic leadership. And again, this doesn't matter if it's personal or professional. He said, authentic, when we're authentic, it's when our values, our beliefs, and our behaviors are in alignment. And the only thing that people see are our behaviors. And then they're going to make assumptions about our values and our beliefs from there. And I'm with you 1,000%, because if I'm talking about having integrity, if I'm talking about holding others accountable, if I'm talking about having a positive impact, how am I living that? How am I demonstrating that? What are the words? What are the actions that I'm taking that show that to other people? And as soon as we're out of alignment, that becomes incredibly, incredibly difficult. And as you say, the foundation isn't solid. You don't have the trust there to be able to move things forward.
How did you come to meet Alan? How did you guys connect in the first place?
As an amazing serendipity whereby I was working on my latest book, and I had written a story about Alan and his remarkable journey at Ford. And so I was working with some of my book coach who was sort of supporting me in the project. It was a great experience for me because I really wanted to push myself. And then so fortunately was connected and shared. Alan found out about the story I was writing about him and then reached out. And we started to have a conversation and quickly aligned around leadership and leadership philosophies. And then I said to him, hey, I was thinking about including CEO masterclasses in the book. So I said to him, would you be open to, I can't think of a better masterclass teacher than you. And he said, send me your book and, you know, and I'll think about it. And fortunately for me, we entered into an amazing collaboration and it was fantastic.
And then was that after the fact when he agreed to do that, you guys decided like, let's go after freaking USA Today and Wall Street Journal? Or did you have that, or did you have that thought of like, you were going to commit to doing that and the process it takes to get there prior to that connection?
Yeah, it was, I always want to just go swing for the fences, go big and try as hard as I possibly can. Right. And again, ask why not? Let's go for it. Let's see what's possible. So often I find we take ourselves out of the game before we even start. And so I set out to write the best quality book possible. And so how can I deliver value on every page? How can I share insights with people that will inspire them in their personal and professional lives? And then when Alan came on board, I was like, all right, this is going to bring this book to a whole other level. Like, what an amazing, one of the most respected chief executives of all time. And then, so let's push, let's go, let's, you know, get this out as much as possible. And the response was fabulous. So feel incredibly grateful that we were able to get that.
Awesome, man. And so let me ask you this. I want to start with coaches first. Executive coaches, like, what makes somebody like Marshall Goldsmith be able to charge what he charges? Like, what's really different between him, me and you, anybody out there? Like, what really is, and the reason I'm asking you this, okay, because I know that attention and becoming a celebrity in your space is almost more important than being good at what you do.
Yeah.
Right. And so do you think it's that part of it with him and other people, or is it like, he's just really that much better? And there's like, what is it?
Well, I think he's a couple of things. I think it's a combination. He's exceptional at what he does. He is a lifelong learner. He asks amazing questions. He's not there to give advice and figure it out for people. He sets the stage for people to learn about themselves in the context in which they operate to the best possible way. So that's fantastic. And because of what he's been able to achieve as a coach, that technical expertise, his network has grown exponentially. You know, you've talked about that as well. You know, having an amazing network of people, a community of people you can draw on. So now with Marshall, who he's able to introduce people to and who he's able to bring into the conversation, who he's able to reference. So that foundation then just drives so much credibility and so much impact. Because now with that flourishing community, now you really can take the conversation to a whole other level. And so I think it's this beautiful combination of being highly skilled and highly passionate about what you do, and then also building that community of practice around you that you can bring into conversations. And so that is the secret sauce of really being an elite practitioner in any field that you're in.
Yeah. And then how about let's CEOs, like, for example, like Alan and people like John Legere, that was the T-Mobile CEO and other big name, like what's separate? So they're here, right? And let's say somebody that's at another company, they're here. What is the difference between this space right here?
Well, I think you nailed it earlier, is the accountability. They hold themselves ruthlessly accountable for what they say. Adam Bryant, who I interviewed, he used to write the corner office column in the New York Times. I love how he frames it. Your say to do ratio has to be pristine. And I love that as a metric of success, right? So if you're going to say something, do it. So I think they just have a ruthless accountability for themselves and others. And then I also think it's not about ego. Like, one of the things that I love is the top CEOs, the most widely celebrated and successful CEOs that I've come across, they have exceptional humility. They know where their strengths are, and they also understand where they lack. And it's not all about them. They are very happy to shine the spotlight on other people because they recognize, hey, the more that I can get out of the people on my team, the better we're going to do, the better I'm going to do, and we're all going to flourish in this kind of environment. So I think that's really it. They just they're comfortable with who they are and what they bring to the table. And they don't have to just fight and try to showcase how awesome they are. They're like, hey, let's just do this. Let's get together and have a great conversation. Let's not worry about who's going to get the credit. We're all going to win. Let's just row together in this really inspiring direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I noticed that. And I know John, I talked to John a lot back in the Clubhouse days when Clubhouse was jamming. He would be in there and he'd pop in my room a couple times, and it's, you know, an opportunity to speak somebody that's like a legend when it comes to CEOs, you know. Very, very unique individual, and but very fun to talk to. And so let me shift gears a little bit here, Craig. When you're working with someone, do you have a framework that you go through? Like, where do you start? Like, let's say you're coming into a company, it's the first time. Like, what are some of the first questions you start to ask?
The first question I'll ask is, what does success look like? And a lot of times people haven't thought about that. They're just like, okay, well, I'm going to have a coach or I'm going to have a speaker. And sometimes they'll have some ideas, and I'll drill a little deeper and say, so, okay, so if it's this, what makes this an important area for you to grow, develop, focus on? And I think once we've been able to identify that, what success looks like, then we build a roadmap. So how are we going to get there? And one of the things about my practice, as well as on the coaching side as well, is that I have an at-risk fee. When I'm involved with someone, then I have a certain 50% portion of my fee that I hold back, and it's only paid at the back end of assignments if they're successful. And as we continue to work together, all I do is check in and say, so how's it going? Are we on track? Are we making progress? Are we having the impact that you're looking for within your business? And so we continually shift and adjust or keep doubling down on what's working. And that's really the framework that I take. I don't have a 5-step formula for success. I want to show up to support my clients, the people who trust me to work with them, in the best way possible. And some people want it highly structured. Some people are comfortable and highly unstructured. To me, being there as a coach is to support the conditions so the person I'm working with can really thrive.
Now, you don't have a framework necessarily, and it might be more loosey-goosey, so to speak, and I love that. But what are some non-negotiables when you're working with someone that you do not avoid covering with them? Besides vision and success, you know?
I want them to be genuinely committed to the process. That is fundamentally it. Now, they can be super skeptical. They can be cynical even. And sometimes in cases where organizations will request, you know, hey, that's a particular senior executive will work with a coach, I'll say, I don't mind at all. We have to be open to the possibility that this can have an impact. And are you truly committed to being successful? Because in some cases, people can say they back to accountability. Say they want it to work and say they want to do the work. And then it's not really, that's not really their priority right now. So making sure that people are crystal clear about, I'm bought in and I'm open to this process and I really want to drive forward, that's critical. And then I view myself and my role also as an accountability coach. And that's what I talk to people about all the time. We're going to set quote unquote homework and I'm going to check in and see how you're doing and making sure that we're on track. So without those fundamental elements, that's they're non-starters for me.
Yeah. And are you, would you consider yourself self-eccentric when it comes to coaching slash consulting? Because, you know, I always found this fascinating. There's some certain people out there that are very eccentric, right? But they get away with it because of the results that they get, or they get this name for themselves, so to speak. Otherwise, you can't get away with it, right? Like, where do you fall in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, what separates me, so my PhD in psychology and business, so I think that's part of it, and that I bring in the research base into my consulting work, my coaching work, my speaking work. And I would say I'm relentlessly positive. So people who work with me, I'm a positive psychologist by training. And people, when the Lego movie came out a few years ago, two different CEO clients of mine emailed me and said, I think we found your theme song. Everything is awesome. And they didn't even know each other at the time. So I think there's a certain eccentricity, if you will, that come with that. And because the title of my first book is Do Good to Lead Well, I think people who are inspired about being their best and making a positive impact on their organizations, on their teams and their communities tend to come to me. So because of that branding, I tend to get a certain type of individual, someone who's like, I just want to crush everyone and you know, just get ahead. And doesn't matter who I affect and how I affect them, they're probably not going to hang out with someone who has a podcast and a book called Do Good to Lead Well.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, who are some of your inspirations, whether speakers, authors, or who are some of the people that stick out?
Marshall Goldsmith, for sure. I've been inspired by him for quite some time and had the privilege to speak with him and you know, and ask him questions. And so he's fantastic. He's just done so much for the field of coaching. Daniel Pink, TED speaker, best-selling author. I love how many years ago he started writing and integrating science and practice. So books that shared lots of great insight, but brought that evidence-based lens. And I'm a huge fan of Adam Grant and his work out of Wharton. I think he just does a fantastic job of talking about highly topical subjects and can, again, distill some really powerful research into tangible tools, tips, techniques people can use. So, and Alan, I love Alan Mulally, I have to say. Yeah. Like, when we met, he said, we're going to have a lot of fun together above and beyond the learning. And I have to say, Alan is one of those unique individuals that just, if you've ever heard him speak or being interviewed, he is the real deal. Like every day, every conversation, he just comes with an energy, with a passion, with a humility. And even during the book launch, we did different events together, he would go out of his way to pivot questions back to me. And I'm going, you've been an amazing CEO. And here you are, you have every opportunity to be able to answer a question. And now you're kind of, you know, moving it over in my direction. So just someone that I have all the time in the world for.
Awesome. I love it. Well, look, I have I got another book or two or five in me. I don't know yet, but my next book, I've been working on trying to figure out the direction I want to go. And one thing that's really kind of keeps coming back up is identification. Mm. And how often do you run into this? Okay. I had I was running a company and I identified as the person that was running that company, whether it's CEO or whatever it was. Right. And when that thing had problems, my identity had problems. When it came crumbling down at one point, I came crumbling down. Right. And then I started to realize, wait a minute, I'm identifying with my damn vehicle. Like, I need to figure out who I am. And then I'm driving vehicles. I can hop in and out of vehicles all day long. One vehicle crashes. Okay. It's not my identity. That's just the vehicle I was in. Right. How often do you get into that conversation with your clients and or have it, you run across it for yourself?
I think you're onto something for sure. That identification piece, that's why they find job loss is one of the most damaging things that anyone can go through. Why? because they identify. When you meet someone in conversation, what do you say? Hi, I'm Craig Dowden. I am an author, a speaker, a coach. So the vehicle, as you talk, it becomes intertwined in our identity. And I think the challenge is they become inseparable. And I love your perspective, Mike, around, well, who am I? And what's important to me? What do I value? And what are my values? And then I'm showing up in different vehicles, in different places. And so getting clear on that, I think, is vitally important in recognizing the separation between ourselves and the environments in which we operate. And I find as well, when people take that on, it can have profound impacts on them psychologically, emotionally, and even physically.
Yeah. I see this not just in business, but also athletes, right? Yes. Like you see these athletes and then when they retire and, you know, like athletics, the thing about athletics is like you start from such a young age. And then so that identity is like really beaten into you, you know?
For sure. And then who are you when that's over? That's why when retirement comes along, they'll say one of the biggest challenges is, well, now who am I that I'm no longer in position X? For people who, exactly as you say, things are going really well. Everyone wants to call you. Your phone's ringing off the hook. You're getting DMs all the time. Then all of a sudden you're struggling. I was like, now who am I? What am I? So are you changed as a person? Your context has shifted. Who you are is still the same. And I think sometimes, and this is where we can get into a lot of trouble as well, that identity wrapped up in the external elements of our environment, right? Like the car I drive or the role I'm in or other things, which is completely disconnected from who we are. It can be. And if they become intertwined, well, now, unless I'm in X, Y, or Z, well, now my self-esteem, my self-confidence, who I am, that value that I bring to myself, that's entirely predicated on the outside world. And so I think that does set up a really dangerous, a slippery slope in terms of for ourselves as we navigate through life, because sometimes no matter what we do, things aren't going to work out. So that happens. And so how do we pivot? How do we learn? How do we grow and stay in that space?
Yeah, I love it. And that's such a big part of leadership, right? I mean, you know, if you have that identity wrapped up in something you're going to try and the thing doesn't work out, I always, you know, obviously it's failure is only learning. It's just more data for you to collect, right? Okay. Well, you don't try those things because your identity's wrapped up in it. It's going to prevent you from being the success that you could be. You know?
And I love what you're saying. Like, let's talk about failure, right? The acronyms for FAIL, two of my favorites, right? From action, I learn. You talked about the action, right? So if we sit and think, well, we're not going to take action. We're not going to gather that data to learn from. And I also love the other acronym for FAIL, which is first attempt in learning. Mm-hmm. Every time we start something new, we're taking that first step. We're not going to knock it out of the park. And so now the gift of failure is learning from it. The gift is, and I want to go back to a point you mentioned earlier, right? Because I love where you're saying, hey, when I'm in my 30s and then when I'm in my 40s, I've got this life experience I can draw on, which is fabulous. That insight is not guaranteed. What you do is you've made a conscious choice to learn from the moments you've had in your 30s and apply them in the 40s. Many of us, I love, someone described it in this way, said, you know, each year you think, okay, I got a year older and a year wiser. Not necessarily if we're basically going to live 2024 the same way we live 2023. Mm-hmm. It's you're just doing 1 year, 30 years, 40 years in repetition. So our goal, our ultimate responsibility is say, what do I learn from this? When it goes well, what do I learn from this? When it doesn't go well, what do I learn from this? What part did I play in this success and in this setback? And what part did luck play? Because sometimes it's just, hey, you're in the right place in the right time. I had an amazing opportunity to collaborate with Alan. There was tremendous luck involved in all of that. And so the right moments had to happen. And again, having that community, having people that are out there, having conversations, yes, they play a role, yet there's also randomness to this equation. So how do you just keep navigating through and learning from those moments?
Yeah, man. Well, let's go as we wind down here. Let's talk about the podcast. How long have you been doing the podcast? And also with that podcast, what has it done for you personally and business-wise having not only having a show, but going on shows consistently?
Yeah, the podcast kind of started as a almost an afterthought because I was hosting live webinars and had this amazing library of audio files there and decided let's go and let's put them out there. And initially I was recording them on my laptop, earlier episodes. Sometimes we've been trying to clean it up, but the audio quality just wasn't there. It's been amazing. The quality of people that I've spoken with, who I've been able to invite on the podcast has been great. And it's just opened up so many doors and so many amazing conversations where I've learned so much and have been able to introduce people and their ideas and their work to a broader audience. And there's just such a warmth in community of podcasters. It's great to be on other people's shows and have them on your shows and just kind of grow that community and grow that conversation. And you find people are passionate about learning in podcasting, in the world of podcasting. So it's always fun. So I just find it's gone well beyond my wildest expectations. It's a joy for me for so many levels, personally and professionally.
Awesome. I love it. Well, Craig, is the best place for people to follow you at craigdowden.com? Is that where you want to send them?
That would be a perfect spot. Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys, go check out craigdowden.com. Craig, thanks for being here. Hang tight while I wrap this up. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, for sure. Pleasure is all mine. Love the conversation. Love what you're doing.
Awesome, man. Guys, thank you so much for being here and listening to the conversation Craig and I just had about what he's made of and also about leadership and looking at it from different perspectives. You know, I think we've covered some things here today. If you listen and take notes and write one or two of those things down, you could really change your life. And that's the intention here always, is to help people elevate, become unstoppable, to live in the life of their dreams. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show here from That One Studios. Until next time, beat that one.